Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Wednesday, December the 20th, 2023. On this week's show, in the first period, we discuss all the games from the past week in the NHL, and we'll also talk about the news from the past week. It includes another head coach being fired. In the second period, our old buddy Jeff Ponder will join us to talk about one of those coaches being fired. Talk about what's going on in St. Louis with the Blues and one of their players feeling the wrath of the fans as well. And in the third period, we'll read your emails and more. All that coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. Again, I'm Eddie Garcia, and he is Doug Stolhan. Hi, Doug.
Hello, Eddie. How are things?
Things are okay. Did have an interesting incident in the past week with our adventures with Herbie, our little dog Herbie, who
not the ambient or the car that came to life in the Disney universe.
That was a while ago. Herbie the love bug,
he went bananas,
among other things. He was fully loaded too as well from what I understand, but so I was at work the other day and my wife called me, which is very rare. So
Is a follow-up to the mouse in the last time she called you.
Yes.
Was a mouse in the dryer.
That's right. That's right. So she calls me and I'm like, uh-oh, this ain't good. And she's a little bit frantic and she informs me that she had fallen down and she had fallen on her not that long ago, recently repaired knee, the reconstructed knee.
Right.
Am I terming that right? The replacement, knee replacement, reconstruct. Yeah, so that's right. And I'm like, are you all right? What happened? Well, Herbie had decided to go potty in the house. She stepped in it. And, you know, as they say, when you're out and about at a restaurant, beware, you know, wet floor. So she took a terrible tumble.
She slipped on it, not stepped on it.
Well, stepped in it. Yeah, I went down.
Oy.
And so I'm like, are you all right? Are you all right? She's, yeah, I think so. I think it's okay. She's actually at the doctor right now getting it looked at, although she thinks it's okay, but there was like some discoloration and whatnot. So she's getting
it checked out. Well, that was the poop.
No, it wasn't poop. It was pee.
Oh.
It was pee. So I'm like, all right. She says, I think I'm okay. So anyway, a few days go by. I'm walking through the house. I step in a puddle and down I go. Right in front of our bed. And it was kind of like...
I don't mean to laugh, but it's a funny visual of...
I don't know. She said she fell forward. I slid backwards. It's kind of like I was sliding into second base. And it had been a while since I slid into a base.
Right.
And
foot or left foot was the one making the step.
I'm assuming it was the right foot because my left foot was kind of under me and the right foot was out.
Yeah. Nothing in your hands?
Nothing in my hands.
Because that would have gone flying.
It was in our bedroom and I just happened to kind of just sit there for a minute. I look up and Herbie is on the bed looking down at me like, what happened to you?
Hey, look out, man. I peed over there.
I don't think he's still trying to get his revenge for me, you know, throwing him out of the room. He already pooped on the bed, but
as I've said,
adventures in potty training the dog.
I think you're figuring out why Herbie was available.
Yeah, well, among other things, we're obviously working hard on getting him potty trained, and he's doing better. But we've got dark hardwood floors. We've got dark hardwood floors, so it is it's hard to see,
especially at night. You know, you're not having much light reflect off of him. But did the family that gave him to you say he's your problem now, Chief?
We got him from a lady who has a bunch of dogs and is trying to find him homes, that kind of a thing. Okay. So,
I'm glad both of you are okay, because unfortunately, when your age starts getting up there, gravity is no longer your friend.
Hmm.
And falls can be impactful. So I'm glad both of you are okay. I hope Karen's knee is okay. That would obviously suck if she suffered some setback due to her dog peeing. But I think you're making a great argument for carpeting the house.
No, because if with as much as he's peeing in the house, that would be a really bad thing. It's really easy to clean up potty mishaps when it's hardwood flooring. Carpeting would not be good. So I understand for our health, it might be a little bit better, but I'm actually going to text her right now and ask her how the knee is.
I'm just picturing you bringing in a late night snack, you know, a little bowl of popcorn.
No, that would be her. That would be my wife. She's the big popcorn eater.
Goes the bowl.
Yeah. No, for her.
And now Herbie has rewarded himself with a delicious snack.
Yes, that's very true. And the other dog will also be getting in on the fun.
Done. Yeah. Our trap worked like a charm. Well, God help you if he pees on the stairs.
Well, the stairs are the only thing the stairs and one of the closets actually are still carpeted. So there's that. But now people can't see you and I. We can see each other. And we're both wearing our Fresno State attire as the season came to an end with a convincing bowl win over the mighty New Mexico State Aggies. So college football season is now over for us. Well, the NFL season has been over for both of us for a little while, even though my team apparently has a non-losing record, but that's not going to last much longer. So we'll be, I don't know how I usually it's after football season where I, you know, really go in on the NHL. Obviously I've been all in on the Kings for more than one reason, but I haven't watched a ton of other games, to be honest. I've seen highlights, a lot of highlights, but not a lot of other games. So now that football season is pretty much over, be getting better, more of a deep dive for me into the entire NHL coming up soon here.
Well, you're picking a good time, because there's some dandy races going on for playoff spots around the league and impactful games every night because of that, those playoff races. And the Central Division is where it's at. First through fifth, very competitive. All five of them are playoff teams right now. So that's makes it fun if they ever play each other. And then the teams on the outside looking in are good teams trying to get back in. So a lot of stuff to watch on a nightly basis. I would avoid any game involving the Ottawa Senators, the San Jose Sharks, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Anaheim Ducks, which you do anyway.
I was forced to see the Sharks the other night, and they are indeed not good. I was going to mention one more thing, though, because I had told my wife, for people who don't know, my wife is a gigantic Los Angeles Chargers fan. We're season ticket holders. And I had informed her after the star quarterback was lost for the season, Justin Herbert, who our dog is named after, that I would no longer be attending any games this year. There's two more home games left, and I had no desire to see the backup quarterback play or that team play any longer. And so she said, fine. And then we've come to find out that a friend of hers had offered us free tickets to a cabana. So we will be... We will be watching.
A cabana?
I assume it is some sort of a suite. It does make me think of, you know, is there going to be someone there fanning us with a giant, you know, leaf, or are we going to have some drinks with some umbrellas in it?
I get that it's, I mean, you're literally going for the experience of the cabana. To hell with the game.
That is 100% correct.
Like, I wouldn't even look towards the field. I'd be the guy that showed up and just mingled for 3 hours. And then, oh, is the game over?
I mean, I'm not much of a mingler, but I will be doing some of that. Yeah. I'll kind of be monitoring what's going on. Probably just to watch the Bills, you know, see what they're doing. But, yeah, we'll see. I'll have a report next week from what the cabana is all about at SoFi Stadium. So
there was a program on the NFL channel, which is their free channel on you know, like Pluto TV and whatnot, and they ranked every NFL franchise in history by their quarterback room, meaning take their top three quarterbacks in franchise history. How good are those three quarterbacks and who had the best quarterbacks of all time? And I can watch those programs all day. You know, it'd be like having a greatest goalies of NHL history. If they did something like that, if the NHL actually put together a quality program, but your wife's Chargers were in the top 10. And I thought, for a franchise that has had Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Dan Fouts, Justin Herbert, and they mentioned a guy going way back, because this is, you know, the NFL history. John Hadle,
yeah.
They mentioned him. For a team that has had those quarterbacks to have never won a Super Bowl and to have only reached one Super Bowl is amazing.
Yeah, amazing, not in a good way.
Right. Like, they've had...
She always listens, by the way, to the off-ice report, so she'll be enjoying this twist of the knife.
Well, you know what I mean, but it's like, I was watching and I'm like, man, that is a... And they were listing all the credits for these folks of, you know, how well Dan Fouts was. He was amazing. And I still, you know, Marvel did that What If.
Yes.
And I still... am fascinated by going back in time and making the Chargers keep Drew Brees and draft Larry Fitzgerald instead of Philip Rivers. And off you go. You would have had Drew Brees, LaDainian Tomlinson, Larry Fitzgerald, and Antonio Gates for like 10 years. And I got to think a Super Bowl would have come out of that.
Well, I'm sure that there are a lot of teams that can do a lot of what ifs.
But it was impressive.
What if the Ducks would have got Sidney Crosby, right?
But that wasn't in their control.
Yeah.
The them not signing Drew Brees, letting him walk away as a free agent and drafting a quarterback instead was, but no, it was it's a fun show to watch. And of course, your Steelers were very good. They were very high up on the list because of Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, and I don't even know who their other.
That's about it. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. You
know, anyway.
Yeah, but those two alone are put you in the top 10. So it's a fun thing to do. And like I said, I think every other team in the top 10 had won a Super Bowl, except for the Chargers, and it was one of those that you're like, man, how has that team never gotten the breaks?
Well, I pray for my poor wife that it will happen at some point in her lifetime. Yeah. I know she's actually, you know, expressed fear that will not happen, but hopefully it does, which right. You never know. That's the thing about sports. There's no guarantee.
It's a big off season for them because who they hire as coach will be a big step.
Speaking of hiring coaches, we've certainly had a bit of that in the NHL, and that's our big story from this week. But we're not going to start with that. We are going to start with all the games from the past week in the NHL. And, you know, sometimes I put the show together. I'm the responsible for how it's structured and most of the stuff that we, you know, how it flows, I guess. And, you know, we've been doing this for a little bit, and I've mentioned, you know, like, oh, there were five games on this day. We're going to talk about three of them or whatever. And I was thinking, why am I doing that? Why not just mention all the games? Because usually it's only two or three games or whatever. So we're going to mention every game that was played over the last week. So it's only going to take a couple more seconds, I would assume. And you'll still have your comments on two or three of the games, and off we go. So let's get into this past week as we start the first period of what happened on the ice in the NHL. We go back to last Wednesday when there were five games on the schedule. And we'll give you a quick note on all of them. We had the Devils beating the Bruins 2-1 in overtime in a fine game. Jack Hughes, the young star for New Jersey, gets the overtime game winner. Vitek Vanacek, 23 saves in net to knock off the Bruins. Jets beat the Kings 5-2. Former King Gabe Vilardi, first game back in L.A. He had been injured in the previous game against the Kings back in Winnipeg. He returns and puts up a career-high 4 points with a goal and three assists. He was involved in that Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. Penguins got by the Canadiens 4-3 in a shootout. Jansen Harkins gets the shootout game winner in the 12th round. Sidney Crosby, 2 goals and an assist. He moves past Paul Coffey and into a tie with Mark Recchi for 13th on the NHL's all-time scoring list, 1,533 points. Avalanche roll over the Sabres, 5-1. Eric Johnson making his return to Colorado to face his old team. An emotional return for him. Played parts of 13 seasons with the Avalanche. It was a contrast to the return of Gabe Vilardi and Alex Iafallo in L.A. They put them up on the scoreboard, and they gave the courtesy wave. And Eric Johnson did like a skate around and waved all the fans and got a standing ovation. So not all returns are equal, but obviously
no.
This guy played 13 seasons. There was a fan favorite. So you understand it, but just reminded me of how sometimes those returns and welcome backs are quite different. Finally, we had the Islanders beating the Ducks 4-3. Simon Holmstrom with a shorthanded game winning goal with a minute 33 to go for the Islanders.
Heartbreak on Long Island for the Ducks on that one. If I was a younger man, I might have thrown something.
Yeah, losing late on a shorty. That's rough. That's
tie
rough.
Game, you get a power play, you're like, hot damn.
Yeah.
And then you give up a shorthanded goal to a dude you've never heard of.
I was going to say, I'm not familiar with Simon Holmstrom's work.
Yeah, not a guy that's known for his sniping ability, but good on him. Good on the Islanders. Bummer for the Ducks. For the Kings and Jets, that was the game of the day, in my opinion. Devils Bruins was also a doozy, but Kings and Jets have been two of the better defensive teams in the Western Conference so far. And Jets get the better here. Did they get a video tribute or just a acknowledgement on the board?
It was a side-by-side still photo of them kind of in action, like an action photo. And it said, welcome back, Gabe and Alex. All right, yeah.
Have they played in Winnipeg this year?
Yes, they did. It was very early in the season, and that was a game Gabe Vilardi got injured when he was in a board battle with Blake Lizotte, and Vilardi actually had some harsh words for his former teammate when he was coming back from the injury. He had missed several weeks with a knee injury and did not think that that was kosher, what was done to him by which added a little more spice to his return.
Yeah, four-point night for him. So he had to definitely, I'm sure he got the victory belt or whatever they give out in the Jets locker room.
For sure.
Yeah. The fighter pilot jacket, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that was a big moment for him, big game for him. But I'm wondering, I'm assuming Pierre-Luc Dubois got a video tribute in Winnipeg or no?
I believe he did. I think that thing is almost like... You have mandatory to do it, right? Now. Yeah, yeah. If you don't,
it's an insult if you don't.
Very much so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
but it sounds like the Kings didn't. I mean, they acknowledged them, but no video tribute. Won a cup with them, didn't they?
No, God, no, no.
Neither one of them were there that long ago. Vilardi seems like he's been around forever.
He hasn't. He's still a relatively young player.
When he got injured earlier in the season, did the Kings trainers jump over the ice onto the ice out of habit?
No, they did not.
He got injured often.
No, they did not. Yes, that's true. So,
but no, that was a nice win for the Jets, and I'm sure Gabe Vilardi was very happy to have a 4-point night against the team that sent him packing and injured him earlier this year.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So nice win for Winnipeg in that one.
All right, let's move on to Thursday, where we had 8 games to tell you about, including the Lightning beating the Oilers 7-4. That snapped Edmonton's 8-game winning streak. Steven Stamkos with the pants trick. And if you are new to the show, that is a 4-goal game. You need to add that to your hockey vocabulary. We coined that here on the Puck Podcast. More appropriately or more accurately, Doug's nephew was the one who came up with that. A 4-goal game, a pants trick. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely law. You need to again,
and that's part lest of it, you so. Think it's just something we've done here, we've had fans throw pants on the ice at NHL arenas.
Well, one, yeah.
I think more than one now, right? Remember we got the picture from the guy in Nashville? It's been a long...
Nashville and... Oh, that's right. You're right. That's right. And Nashville and Long Island. Yeah, that's right. You're right. I stand corrected.
So, yeah, twice we've gotten pants, trousers on the ice, and NHL announcers have mentioned it during broadcasts, so this has got some legs to it. But that is obviously a rare feat. And an amazing one. And it originated, if you're wondering why or where, I took my nephew to his first hockey game. I told him if somebody scores three goals, we have to throw our hats on the ice because of a hat trick. He said, what do we throw if they score four? I said, nobody says, what do you think we should throw? He said, our pants. And my dad famously said, God, I hope nobody scores four goals.
Yes. Also in that game where Stamkos had the pants trick, Nikita Kucherov continues his great season with a goal and two assists. Andrei Vasilevskiy had 53 saves and Connor McDavid a goal and an assist in the loss. The Blues down the Senators 4-2 in what would be the first game for new Blues head coach Drew Bannister. However, St. Louis forward Jordan Kyrou was booed at home every time he touched the puck. He had some comments about the firing of head coach Craig Berube. Well, actually, he kind of didn't. He was asked about it. He said that he's not my coach anymore. No comment. So the fans in St. Louis did not enjoy that, apparently. Afterwards, he was interviewed about being booed by the home fans and was fighting back tears talking about it. Obviously, much more on this in the second period with Jeff Ponder, our good friend from letsgobluesradio.com. And I'm going to ask you a question about this in a minute as well, Doug. The Blue Jackets outscored the Maple Leafs 6-5 in overtime. Columbus had a 5-0 lead going into the third period. Toronto stormed back with 5 goals in the third to force overtime, but come up short. Kent Johnson with the overtime game winner for Columbus. Austin Matthews, a pair of goals, numbers 22 and 23 for him. And one of the crazier games this season. Canucks blanked the Panthers 4-0. Thatcher Demko, 36 saves in the shutout on the night that Vancouver honored a former goalie, Roberto Luongo, put into their ring of honor. That was the second straight game Florida had been shut out. Kraken boat raced the Blackhawks 7-1. Kyler Yamamoto, a couple of goals, and Joey Decord, 21 saves in net. Flyers get by the Capitals 4-3 in a shootout. Bobby Brink with a goal in regulation and the shootout game winner. Wild over the Flames 3-2 in a shootout. Matt Boldy, a goal in regulation and the shootout game winner. And the Hurricanes got by the Red Wings 2-1. Pyotr Kochetkov, 25 saves in net. Now, I don't know what games you're going to talk about, but I did want to ask you, the booing of Jordan Kyrou in St. Louis was very interesting. I thought it was a little over the top, frankly. Now, if people have listened to the show for a while, we've talked about booing in the past. I'm not a big booer. I'm not going to say I've never done it or would never do it, but usually it's more booing the team's effort or something like that, but signaling out a player on your team for something he said that I didn't think was that controversial. It wasn't like he said, good riddance, Craig Berube. That guy was a jerk. But can you ever recall being at a game or maybe yourself booing like a specific player for something he said? It just seemed very unique to me.
Well,
I can't ever remember
on my team or on the other team,
on your team, not the other team.
Yeah. I was going to say, I goaded Norm Charlton into,
calling homophobic. You a slur. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, took great delight in booing him. He was one of the nasty
baseball
boys. Player,
former baseball closer. Anyway.
I don't recall, not off the top of my head. No, it's certainly very rare that a home player gets booed in any circumstance, but much less for something he said off the ice that was not, outrageously offensive. You know,
we talked about a couple of returns, right, of old players, and you'll get that, right? If some guy leaves, he picks another team.
Oh, no. Yeah. But you're on a different team then.
Right. But I can't recall. And I kind of put it myself in it, but I can't recall. I'm sure it's happened, but anyway, the point is it's really rare for you to boo a guy on your team. I don't know. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I can understand not liking what he said, even though it wasn't much, but to boo him every time he touches the puck, I was like, where am I, in Philadelphia? Or I just didn't see that coming from the folks in St. Louis. I don't know.
Well, I mean, do they boo the introduction of Drew Bannister as well? Like, how much are they backing Craig Berube here? I mean, I think the point of Jordan Kyrou's comments was, I'm focused on what we have, you know, I'm not going to talk about people that aren't in the room anymore, aren't part of the organization.
And look, we know in sports, there are players and coaches who don't get along. I mean, that's universal. Not everybody's going to like everybody. So maybe he didn't like Craig Berube and he just wanted to move on from it.
And so, it's the idea, I got nothing good to say, so I'm not going to say anything at all.
Right. I don't know.
But I would have not been booing him. Let's put it that way. If somebody said, what do you think about the firing of Dallas Eakins? And they said, he's not our coach anymore, so I'm not going to comment on that. I wouldn't be like, well, boy, get ready to hear the hisses when you take the ice, Max Jones, you son of a bitch.
I was pretty wild. And then his reaction, where he's clearly hurt by this. Interesting. And there's
He's just a great actor.
Yeah. We will have a follow-up on this as well. But any other games that you wanted to mention from Thursday?
Oh, for sure. The Wild Flames was the game of the day for me because both teams are fighting for points to get back in the playoff picture. And they did each other a solid by taking the game into a shootout where they got the winner there. It was a competitive game, back and forth. Nobody had a big lead at any point like that Leafs Blue Jackets game, but back and forth. And I thought that was an important win for the Wild, but if you're going to lose, may as well get a point kind of game for the Flames. And then the other game of the day, I thought, was the Hurricanes Red Wings. Detroit's been much better than expected so far this season and great offensively. And I was impressed with the defensive effort. Pyotr Kochetkov coming up with 25 saves on 26 shots to get the win. Ville Husso in net for Detroit was under siege most of the game. And if you remember that movie, it's time for your colonoscopy. But he put up a great effort to keep them in it. But ultimately a nice regulation win for the Carolina Hurricanes, who get the 2-1 victory. So those were the two games I wanted to highlight from last Thursday. As for Columbus, man almighty. I guess you sigh and laugh it off when you get the win anyway, but boy, oh boy, you got a 5-0 lead going into the third. You have got to win that game in regulation.
And you are a little bit notorious for turning things off or leaving, you know, when your team's getting mollywopped. I got to imagine there were a ton of Leafs fans who clicked that thing off and then were like, what? We got a point out of it?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, 5-0 going into the third. If you got to work the next day, if you got anything else to do.
Of course, with today's technology, though, you got to imagine maybe your buddy texts you and like, are you watching this?
Yeah.
No, maybe. I'm not. I turned it off. Well, turn it back on.
They just tied it. And then you turn it back on just to see it lose.
That's what you get for not sticking with your team.
Yeah. No, that's the, I'm obviously the cursed one. I'm the bad luck for the team. We've all done that, right? Like, for I turned it on, they started doing poor. I turned it off, they started doing well again.
Yeah.
I'm not watching the rest of the week. So you got to win that game in regulation if you're Columbus, though. They got the 2 points, but that's still a game where the coach is like, we're skating tomorrow, boys. Rest up, because it's going to be a tough practice.
Let's move on to Friday. We had 6 games, including the Predators edging the Hurricanes 6-5 in overtime. Philip Forsberg gets his third overtime game winner of the season for Nashville in that one. Coyotes shut out the Sharks 1-0. Connor Ingram, 21 saves for his third shutout this season. Matias Michelli scoring the only goal of the game. Sabres beat the Golden Knights in Las Vegas 5-2. Buffalo scoring the final 4 goals of the game, all in the third period. Casey Mittelstadt had a pair of them. Stars over the Senators 5-4. Matt Duchene, game winner in the third. Jake Ottinger, though, left this game with a lower body injury. We'll update his status in just a bit. Bruins edge the Islanders 5-4 in a shootout. David Pastrnak, a goal in regulation and the shootout game winner. Rangers beat the Ducks 5-1. Jonathan Quick, another win for him, now 9-0-1 on the season. Chris Kreider, 2 goals. He moves into third on the Rangers all-time goal scoring list, which is, I found, a bit surprising.
very surprising. This is an original six team. This isn't a 90s expansion team. Yeah, that's very surprising, but good for him. The game I want to highlight is the Sabres Knights for much the same reason we talked about Gabe Vilardi going into Los Angeles and having a great night. Alex Tuck, you got to think he felt good going into Vegas and contributing directly to that win. He was the primary assist on the game winning goal, and then he scored the put away goal to make it 4-2. And just a guy that I think has got to look back and be like, there was no reason to get rid of me. I get you wanted Jack Eichel, but Alex Tuck is a very good player in his own right. And again, the what-if game, would Vegas have won the cup last year had they not made the Eichel trade? We will never know. They have the cup. They have no regrets. Winning is a great deodorant, but that was a great win for Buffalo and Alex Tuck, I think, individually, in a game where Buffalo has really been struggling. And we're going to talk about the coaches. That's another one that they should be better than they are on paper. And you don't say that often about Buffalo, but this is they're underachieving with what they have on the ice.
Well, apologies for the dog barking because the garbage truck is going by picking up the garbage.
Well, he's got to let him hear it.
You know it. Show him who's boss.
Yeah.
Anything else for Friday, Doug?
No.
All right, let's move on to always a busy Saturday. 13 games to mention, including the Rangers beating the Bruins 2-1 in overtime in a battle of the top two teams in the Eastern Conference. Vincent Trocheck scores both Rangers goals, including the overtime game winner. Blues moved to 2-0 since the firing of Craig Berube with a 4-3 overtime win over the Stars. Colton Parayko gets the OT game winner, and Jordan Kyrou had a breakaway goal and was cheered by the fans. In St. Louis afterwards,
I don't know what my reaction would be after that. If you boo me and then you're cheering me, I might give a younger me might give him the finger.
Well, that would have been unfortunate, but it would have been very newsworthy. Yeah. Afterwards, they did that thing where, you know, they have the in-arena person interview them on the bench, and apparently he was the guy. I don't know if he was the number one star or not, but he got interviewed. And dropped a couple of F-bombs, but in a good way. He said, I love effing playing for these fans. And so I guess all's well that ends well with Jordan Kyrou, at least for now. The Maple Leafs crushed the Penguins 7-0. Quite the return to Toronto for Kyle Dubas, the former Leafs GM now with Pittsburgh. Martin Jones, 38 saves in net in the shutout. Got plenty of offensive support. But Austin Matthews actually did not play in this game. Sat out with the flu. Canadians cooled off the Islanders with a 5-3 win. That was the Islanders' first regulation loss in the month of December. Devils down the Blue Jackets 6-3. Jack Hughes scoring his second career hat trick in that one. Flyers get by the Red Wings 1-0. Samuel Ersson, 33 saves in the shutout for Philadelphia. And defenseman Cam York scored the only goal of the game. Coyotes post back-to-back shutouts with a 2-0 blanking of the Sabres. Kirill Vemelka in net this time. He had 28 saves. Kings edged the Kraken 3-2 in a shootout. LA improving to 12-1-1 on the road this year. Jets over the Avalanche 6-2. Gabe Vilardi, two more goals for him. We had the Panthers over the Oilers 5-1. Connor McDavid, an assist. Predators over the Capitals 3-1. Nashville had won four in a row at that point. Flames knock off the Lightning 4-2 to snap a four-game skid. And the Wild got by the Canucks 2-1 in a shootout.
Jordan Kyrou was the number one star of the game, and that's why he was interviewed and get an opportunity to talk directly to the fans. And always a good idea to give an emotional player a hot mic.
Well, it worked out, but yes. That would have been a hell of a thing, man. That might have let off the show if he had given them the double birds and said, eat a candy bar out of my ass.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it, folks. If you don't want me at my worst, you don't get me at my best. You can kiss me where the sun don't shine. And since I got a hot mic, that's my big white behind. Boom! He throws the stick into the crowd, but it's not to give a fan.
Man,
not to give a fan like, a souvenir.
That'd be like a WWE move, right?
Yeah, he turns heel. Oh, man. The two games I wanted to talk about were the The suddenly struggling this week, Oilers getting beat 5-1 by the Panthers. Very nice win by Florida on a road trip about as far as you can travel in the NHL from South Florida to Edmonton, Alberta. But they made a great showing up there on the road and got a nice win. Got off to a great start, 3-0 after the first period. Held them off, get a 5-1 win. Impressive performance by Sergei Bobrovsky with 38 saves. Just a really nice job, I thought, by Florida on the road. And the other game, Detroit has had a great offense. Suddenly they're struggling. They only had the one goal against Carolina, and now they get shut out by Philadelphia. But you got to give it up to the Flyers, who are playing very impressive in their own zone defensively this season. It's been very – the effort is there. The execution is there. And Samuel Ersson with a 32-save shutout. That's good work from, you know, a team that a lot of us did not expect much from this year, and we'll have more on them later in the first period.
All right, let's move on to Sunday. We had five games. The Golden Knights knock off the Senators 6-3, and what would be the final game for Ottawa head coach DJ Smith. Obviously, much more on that coming up in a bit. Canucks down the Blackhawks 4-3. Brock Besser getting his 23rd goal of the season. Ducks defeat the Devils 5-1. Adam Henrique against his old team, his first career hat trick, as Anaheim snapped a five-game skid. I was surprised that that was his first career hat trick, but apparently that
so was he.
Yeah. The Avalanche rolled over the Sharks 6-2. Nathan MacKinnon, two goals to extend his point streak to 15 games. And the Capitals get by the Hurricanes 2-1 in a shootout.
The Capitals are an interesting team this year because nobody's talking about them as a cup contender. We know Ovechkin is struggling. He only has five goals on the season, and everybody thought that's the reason to watch the team, is to watch him chase Wayne Gretzky's record. And they got some players on their team that you've never heard of. Joe Snively is playing. Beck Malmsten is playing.
I'm sorry?
You heard me. Beck Malmsten.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, right? And so, and yet they're getting wins. Joe Snively sounds like he should be tying some women to a railroad tracks, for God's sake, while he twists his mustache and laughs maniacally.
Yeah.
But they continue to get wins and stay in, and we're going to talk about the playoff race, in the playoff picture. So impressive what they've been able to do with an offense that isn't as productive as it used to be. They're kind of morphing in front of us as a team that was built around Alexander Ovechkin and is now not, but is still getting results. So I found them to be impressive this season. And then the other game is the Ducks ending their losing streak. It has gone too long. They were on a winning streak for a while. They really hit the skids, but a good bounce back win and get the guys feeling good about themselves again. And Adam Henrique with three nights. Now, the one thing I'm looking forward to as a Ducks fan is Trevor Zegras has been out for a while. Jamie Drysdale has been out for a while. Mason McTavish has been out for a while. When you miss those three guys on a team that wasn't deep to begin with, it's going to have an impact. And you're going to get a bunch of guys playing minutes that aren't at that caliber. So when those guys get back and they're all close, I am looking forward to watching the Ducks at full strength again. Now you will see the full power of this battle station.
All right, let's move on to, we are on, where are we? Monday. The Flames defeated the Panthers 3-1. Calgary scored the game-tying and game-winning goals in the third period, both shorthanded. Michael Backlund tied it, and then Blake Holman with the game winner. Penguins got by the Wild 4-3. Sidney Crosby, a power play goal, was the game winner in the third, and he passed Mark Recchi for 13th on the NHL's all-time points list. Stars over the Kraken 4-3 in overtime. Thomas Harley with the overtime game winner for Dallas. Canadians edged the Jets 3-2 in overtime. Justin Barron, overtime game winner for Montreal. And the Ducks down the Red Wings 4-3. Anaheim jumping out to a 4-0 lead, then holding on for the victory.
Hey, back-to-back wins for the Ducks. I'll take it. The game I wanted to mention, though, is the Penguins win. Penguins have been struggling all year. Both teams have been struggling and underachieving. Both teams thought they would be in playoff position at this point in the season. Neither one of them are. But that was a very needed 2 points for Pittsburgh. And what do you know? Sidney Crosby is the guy that comes through in the clutch. They had a goal from Malkin. They had a goal from Gensel. They had a goal from Crosby in this game. That's unfortunately what they need, because the rest of the team is not carrying its weight offensively. The plan of having this stud defense with Letang and Erik Karlsson has not worked out as envisioned. And but they get the 2 points here. Alex Nedeljkovic getting the win in net. They're going to need to get on a heater here pretty soon and start racking up wins. But I just, you know, there's guys on this team that are, okay, like a guy like Jeff Carter. You remember him well from when he was winning cups with the Kings 10 years ago. He's still on this team. Rickard Rakell, I remember him from the Ducks 5-6 years ago. He's still on this team. They're not producing. And so when you get Lars Eller, kind of a guy that's bounced around the league, people know he's not producing. So when you have guys that are in those roles or being asked to do more than they can at this point, it gets difficult. One of the names I want to throw out to you, Eddie, Radim Zahorna. You familiar with him?
It does. I have heard the name before. Yes. I want to say Flyers and Capitals, maybe.
Great name. He was in this. He has played for the Flames, Maple Leafs, and now with the Penguins. Again, this is his second stint with the Penguins.
Completely whiffed on that one.
That's a guy with 60 NHL games and is a name that you're like, I'm sorry? When I saw it skating on the ice, I'm like, nope, don't know Zahorna. Looked him up, and I'm like, wow, this is not his first game. This is not even his first season. He's been in the league for 5 years playing off and on, so. Just shows you how many guys come and go in this league. And as closely as you and I follow it, there's still a lot of players we've never heard of.
And they're talking expansion, as you know, and we may have more guys that we've never heard of. If that is
such a bad idea.
You mentioned the Penguins, and we know what they've invested in this season, and we understand the realities of their roster. They say Mike Sullivan is safe, and he's won a cup there, but we just saw a cup-winning coach get shown the door, and that team doesn't nearly have as much expectations, I would say, or the pressures, or what they've done with their roster.
A new GM.
Yeah. All that's, but you talked about having to get on a heater soon. You wonder if that's a move they might make, but we shall see.
I mean, it's got to be a card you play. You can't not play that card to me if you're Kyle Dubas. You can't leave that one in the deck. You got to try exhaust all options to try and get the talent out of this roster that you think you had in the preseason. They built this to be a playoff team. It's not. You can't just hope the players figure it out. You got to try a different approach. And the first thing I would try, especially since he just got hired and he didn't hire Mike Sullivan, the only thing I can think of is ownership told him, we're not getting rid of Mike Sullivan. You're working with that. He's your head coach. So make it work. And then he's got his hands are tied and he's got to make the best of what he can do. But if it's up to me as the GM and team president, which he is, you're out. I want to get the person I want in here, and I got to try something to jumpstart this team. And Mike Sullivan's been there a long time. It would be a shock to the system for a lot of the veterans in that locker room to see him get fired midseason. And I think it would let them know, especially now. Once the Christmas break is over and they get back in January, I would say, you know, I'm going to give you 5 games. I want to see some results. If not, you're out, because then I can tell the players you've got 2 months before the trade deadline to prove why you should still be here. And then off you go.
All right. And we'll wrap it up with Tuesday, 11 games. Rangers score the final 3 goals of the game, beat the Maple Leafs 5-2 to snap Toronto's 9-game point streak. Austin Matthews was back from the flu, had a couple of goals, numbers 24 and 25 on the season for him. Coyotes edge the Senators 4-3 in what will be the final game for head coach DJ Smith in Ottawa. They had a 3-0 lead in this one, then allowed 4 straight goals. To suffer the loss. Lightning hand the Blues their first loss since their coaching change. 6-1 was the final. Nikita Kucherov with 2 more goals. Wild knock off the Bruins in Boston 4-3 in overtime. Kirill Kaprizov 2 goals, including the overtime game winner. Flyers down the Devils 3-2 in overtime. Jack Hughes, who has done many, many good things for New Jersey and will do many, many good things. A horrific turnover in overtime on a backhand pass on his own zone, intercepted. Game over, drive home safely. Philadelphia riding a 9-game point streak at this point, as we all predicted. Hurricane surprised the Golden Knights with a 6-3 win. Six different goal scorers in that one for Carolina. Islanders down the, excuse me, I got it right the first time. Islanders down the Oilers 3-1 after winning 8 in a row. Edmonton's now dropped 3 straight. The Blue Jackets beat the Sabres 9-4. Kirill Marchenko with a natural hat trick. Obviously, 3 consecutive goals. The 9 goals scored by Columbus was their most in a game since a 10-0 shutout win over Montreal in 2016. And you can go back and hear our reaction to that game because that is still available for you with all of our archive shows on the Puck Podcast.
Yeah, I think they're still firing the cannon from that game.
Kings beat the Sharks 4-1, LA 13-1-1 on the road this season. Blackhawks surprise the Avalanche 3-2, and the Canucks knock off the Predators 5-2.
Well, the two I want to look at both ended 5-2. The Vancouver win over Nashville. Vancouver continues to impress. You wonder, when is the clock going to strike midnight on Cinderella? It has not yet. They are still playing great hockey. Their best players are playing very well. You're getting goals in this one from Elias Pettersson. He had a goal and an assist. Quinn Hughes with 2 points as well. And then depth guys. Neil Zaman, never heard of him. He had a goal tonight. Teddy Bluger, depth guy, getting a goal. Pew Suter, still bouncing around the league. He had 2 points. Nils Höglander had a goal. When your best players are having great seasons and your depth guys are playing well, it's the opposite of what Pittsburgh has going on right now. And speaking of Pittsburgh, their old goalie, Casey DeSmith, got the win with 26 saves on that night. So everything's working right now for Vancouver. Good times. They don't want the holiday break to happen. And then the Rangers win over Toronto. Toronto is good. There's no doubt about that. But they've, losing to the Blue Jackets, losing pretty soundly here to the Rangers, a 5-2 game. I think it says more about the Rangers and their strength from top to bottom and how good a team this is. You mentioned Jonathan Quick has not lost in regulation this year, and they have Igor Shesterkin. So best goaltending tandem in the league right now as far as results. And their players are just, I mean, you talk about the good players are coming through. We know how good the bread man, Artemi Panarin, has been all season. He had a goal in this one as well. And it's just an embarrassment of riches right now for the Rangers. And I think they have established themselves as the team to beat in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. They are just they're taking on all comers and playing well from in all three zones. And it doesn't look like a fluke to me. It looks like sustainable success that they can translate, that will translate into the postseason.
All right, let's look at the standings after another week of action in the NHL and a little bit of movement here and there, but not too much. We'll start in the West, in the Pacific Division. There was no movement among the top three teams. It's still Vegas, Vancouver, and LA, 1-2-3. The Kings do have 5 games in hand on both Vegas and Vancouver, but of course they have to do something in those 5 games for that to matter.
Hope they're on the road for you.
Yeah. Dallas is leading the Central Division now. They moved up from second place. Colorado drops down to second from first. Winnipeg.
They're tied, but they have games in. Dallas has games in hand.
Both 40 points. You are correct. Winnipeg is still in third. Your two wildcard teams are the two wildcard teams we had from a week ago. So no change. Nashville and Arizona. St. Louis and Calgary are 3 points back of that final wildcard spot. Moving over to the East, we'll start in the Atlantic Division, where it's Boston in first, followed by Toronto and Florida. So a little flip-flop there between second and third. Maple Leafs move to second. Panthers fall down to third. You have in the Metropolitan Division the Rangers, who, by the way, lead the Bruins by 1 point for the most points in the East, 45-44. Rangers still in first in the Metro. Philadelphia and the Islanders flip-flop this week. Flyers are in second. Islanders are in third. Your two wildcard teams are two new wildcard teams from a week ago. Carolina and Tampa Bay are your two wildcard teams. Detroit and Washington both drop out of wildcard spots, but they, along with New Jersey, are all just 1 point back.
Yeah, that's the teams lurking on the outside in both conferences that I would say you feel like they're going to make it at some point. Definitely New Jersey. New Jersey feels like it would be stunning if they did not make the playoffs, even though they've been on the outside looking in for quite a while now. But as you said, they're 1 point out of a wild card and not that far out of getting an automatic berth either. They're only 4 points out of getting an automatic berth as the three seed in the Metro, but with many teams to pass, catch and pass. In the West, I don't think there is a team I can look at on the outside and say, well, I think they'll be there at the end of the year. St. Louis has already fired their coach. Minnesota's already fired their coach. Seattle and Edmonton just can't seem to get enough momentum going to gain ground. As you said, Edmonton had a nice winning streak. Now they've lost three straight. And Minnesota or Calgary just is kind of like the Devils in the sense that you'd think they're there with what they have on paper. But at the same time, they just don't, the results aren't there to speak of. So you are what your record says you are. Calgary has 13 wins in 32 games. That's not good enough. That's not going to be a playoff pace. And they got to get things turned around in the new year.
Let's check on your statistical leaders in the NHL. Your points leader is Nikita Kucherov in Tampa Bay, having a fine season, 22 goals and 32 assists for 54 points. He's the only player thus far that has hit the 50-point plateau. Nathan MacKinnon of the Avalanche is in second place with 48 points. JT Miller of the Canucks has 45 points. And then David Pastrnak of Boston and Artemi Panarin of New York both have 43 points. As for your goal-scoring leaders, Austin Matthews has taken over the top spot. He's got 25 goals. Brock Besser of Vancouver sliding down to that second spot, 23 goals for him. Nikita Kucherov with 22 goals. Those are your only three players so far that's hit the 20-goal mark. Then you've got Pastrnak with 19, Sam Reinhart of Florida, and Sidney Crosby of Pittsburgh, and Zach Hyman of Edmonton, all with 18 goals.
I'm going to throw a stat at you here, Eddie. Let's look at just the last 30 days for the skaters around the NHL and who's done well. A lot of the familiar names, Kucherov, MacKinnon, and McDavid, all have 26 points in the last 30 days to lead the NHL. And then there's a group of four players that have 18 points in the last 30 days that are tied for fourth. Matthew Barzal of the Islanders, Jack Eichel of the Golden Knights, Mika Zibanejad of the Rangers. And the surprise, the pick for most underrated player in the NHL this year, I think, goes to Noah Dobson, who has 18 points in the last 30 days for the on defense for the New York Islanders. And this season, Eddie, he has 33 points in 31 games and is a plus 17. That is a dude that is not getting enough attention and love as a top defenseman in the NHL so far this season. Excellent season from him, and no doubt part of why Islanders are in a playoff position as we get ready to go into 2024.
Let's check in on the guys who stop the puck for a living. Who are your top five goaltenders in goals against average? Aiden Hill of Vegas leading right now, 1.93. He's the only goaltender right now with a goals against average that is less than two. Cam Talbot of the Kings, a little bit over that at 2.02. Then you've got Jeremy Swayman of Boston, 2.06. Jonathan Quick of the Rangers, 2.09. And Thatcher Demko of Vancouver at 2.34. As far as your save percentage leaders, it's Aiden Hill and Jeremy Swayman, Vegas and Boston, both at 9.33. Cam Talbot of LA is in third place at 9.26, actually tied with Jonathan Quick of the Rangers, 9.26. And then Charlie Lindgren of Washington is at 9.25.
And looking at the last 30 days in net, UC Saros, 9 wins in 11 starts. That's very impressive with a 2.38 goals against average and a 9.26 save percentage. That's why Nashville is back in the playoff race. Thatcher Demko continues to win. That team's been excellent all year. The surprise might be how good Connor Hellebuck has been in these last 30 days. 1.80 goals against average and 9.40 save percentage in 10 games with 7 wins. That is lights out good hockey, and that's why the Jets are playing very well so far this season in good spot as we get to the play of the winter break.
All right, let's get to all the news from the past week in the NHL, and we lead off with another coaching casualty. Fourth coach fired so far this year. Some will say, what in the world took so long? This one certainly was not a surprise, but the Ottawa Senators have made a coaching change. DJ Smith is out. He took assistant Davis Payne with him. Davis Payne is probably like, what did I do? Why can't I stay? But he's been replaced on an interim basis by old veteran Jacques Martin, and former Senators legend Andrew Robertson has also joined him as an assistant coach. DJ Smith had, this was his fifth season behind the bench in Ottawa at the time of his firing, a record of 11-15 for 22 points, dead last in the Eastern Conference. Before that, his teams never finished higher than sixth in the Atlantic Division, and they never made the playoffs. Obviously, he was brought in to help rebuild the team. There were a lot of changes that were made, and they never seemed to really gain any traction at all. And obviously, new ownership there in Ottawa. So this was, of all the firing so far this year, this had to be the least surprising firing, in my opinion, anyway. And I don't know that DJ Smith gets another chance somewhere else, frankly. I certainly could see Craig Berube, Jay Woodcroft, maybe even Dean Evason getting another opportunity. I don't know that DJ Smith's going to get another chance as a head coach anytime soon. Might need to earn his coaching opportunity again, going to the AHL, or maybe if he's an assistant, I don't know about that. But again, could see this one coming from a lot of different areas, but the bottom line is the Senators are not good, and DJ Smith is now unemployed.
Right. And well, I think DJ is going to get a job as an assistant, you know, around the NHL, and
but hard to get another head coaching job from being
an assistant. My point is, he'll get an assistant job, yeah, and then while he's there, he may be an interim coach himself.
That could be his
and
best
prove
path,
his yeah, and prove his mettle there, and be like, ah, this guy really did a great job getting that team a spark, and then get a job from there. So he'll continue to grind and work. But I find it hard to believe that he was the problem. You know, I get that.
Well, but he certainly wasn't the solution. I mean,
correct. You got to try something. But an interesting note from Ottawa media was that he got fired yesterday, correct?
Was it yesterday or day before yesterday? I think it was day before yesterday.
Okay, so Monday. My days are so Monday. He got fired Monday. And then the next day, your coach gets fired. The next day, they have an optional team practice. 10 players showed up. So when less than half your roster feels like showing up for an optional team practice. Now I get the word optional is there, but that speaks to a leadership problem within the locker room, within the players. Brady Tkachuk is the captain of this team. When your coach gets fired and you've got a new coach doing his first practice the next day, show up, at least shake the guy's hand, say hello, congratulate him on getting the head coaching job. Tell him, you know, hear what he has to say as he addresses the team for the first time. I get that it's optional and your option is to not show up, but it speaks volumes when you don't even care to show up. If your boss, Eddie,
yeah,
got fired and the next day there was an optional team meeting with the new boss, are you showing up?
Probably.
Yeah. Probably be a good idea to show up and say hello and put a face to the name. And
unless I didn't care.
Exactly. And had a guaranteed contract worth millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I think this problem is in the locker room, in the leadership. And it's surprising because we talked about they have good veterans like Claude Giroux, Vladimir Tarasenko. They've brought in good players that should be better than this. And I don't know that they're among the 10 that showed up or not, but DJ Smith, as you said, he wasn't the solution. I don't think he was the problem. I think this is a bigger problem within the organization, locker room, and it's going to be tough for them to figure out which pieces need to stay, which pieces need to go, and what we can build around, because there's a lot of talent on that roster, and they should be a lot better than they are. I mean, my goodness, they are third worst in the entire NHL, just 1 point ahead of Chicago and San Jose, two teams that are not trying to win. Ottawa is trying to win, and they're in that company. So they've got a lot of work to do. I don't think DJ Smith was to blame, but you have to try something. It's new ownership. They want results, and nobody is going to cry foul at DJ Smith not getting a fair chance. He was there 4 years. the team did not show progress under his coaching. But man, it just, it didn't speak well of the roster to me that the next day, less than half the team shows up for work.
Let's get to the ER report. And unfortunately, a lot of names to tell you about. Probably the most significant injury from the past 7 days. Columbus Blue Jackets forward Patrick Laine going to be out 6 weeks after suffering a fractured clavicle, which is, that's your collarbone, right? Clavicle, collarbone. Stars goaltender Jake Oettinger week to week with a lower body injury. Obviously, that is a big concern for Stars fans. A lot of goalie issues right now. Detroit goalie Ville Husso is week to week with a lower body injury, and goalie Alex Lyon is out until at least after Christmas. So it's, I'm not sure who's lining the net right now for Detroit.
Let me take a look at what their depth chart looks like.
Seattle Kraken goalie Philip Grubauer also week to week with an undisclosed injury. LA Kings backup goalie Phoenix Copley placed on long-term injured reserve with a lower body injury, and defenseman Vladislav Gavrikov week-to-week with a knee injury. Pittsburgh Penguins forward Brian Rust on long-term injured reserve. Wild forward Matt Zuccarello week-to-week. Capitals forward TJ Oshie on injured reserve, as is Panthers forward Anton Lundell and Sabres forward Jeff Skinner. And Hurricanes goalie Frederick Anderson cleared to resume skating after a blood clot issue. Got an update on the Red Wings goaltending?
I do. Situation. Did you mention John Gibson injured?
I did not mention John Gibson.
Yeah, he's out as well, and got injured in the win over the Devils, I think. Anyway, so he's out. Not like the Ducks needed that. Just one more player to be injured. Yeah, here's a couple of names you'll remember from the past, listeners and Eddie. The new goaltending tandem in Detroit until their starter and backup get healthy.
Well, I know one of them because it's a note coming up here in a second, so I'll spoil your
James Reimer
and Michael Hutchinson. Michael Hutchinson, yes. The Red Wings signed Michael Hutchinson to a 1-year two-way contract.
Yep, and James Reimer is the other one. I mean, holy mackerel. I did not realize either one of them were still in the NHL.
The NHL and NHLPA, I saw this, Doug, investigating protocol that led to Coyotes defenseman Yusuf Imaki lingering without care for hours in a Dallas hospital after a severe facial injury that required 55 stitches. There was a possible related story from this as well. I don't know if you saw this, but it was kind of an amusing video where in between intermission, between a Stars-Senators game, Jacob Chychrun went down the tunnel with all the Dallas players and ended up going into their locker room. Apparently, he also got cut in the face, and he needed to get stitched up by the Stars medical personnel, which I think is actually fairly common. Maybe not walking down the tunnel with the other team, but I don't know that every team takes a doctor on the road with them if they need some sort of stitching up or something like that. I think that
I believe that's the home arena provides that.
Right, right. But the Villamaki thing, interesting. Look, I've been to the ER. I'm sure you have as well. It's not like you just walk in there and suddenly it's like, oh, come right in here and we'll take care of you. I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're a professional athlete, I mean, look, 55 stitches is nothing to sneeze at. But I'm also guessing if you're literally going to an emergency room at a local hospital, there's probably other people that are in line ahead of you with more severe things. I don't know. An interesting story. Apparently the cut was so severe that it obviously couldn't be done at the arena properly. He had to actually go to the hospital, but, my takeaway from this is, and maybe I'm completely missing something, is what is the NHL and NHLPA, upset about that a player had to wait in line? Explain it to me then, please.
First of all, they have a protocol that they all adhere to that they don't make public. So we don't know what is supposed to happen in this situation. But what they are claiming happened here is, as you said, he took a slap shot to the face, was bleeding, and they said, we can't fix this here. Let's get you to a local hospital.
All right.
They take him there, and they said, okay, good luck. And they left him, his wife, and a Coyotes employee unnamed at the emergency room. And off you go. So the hospital is like, look, we're busy.
Yeah.
We can't help you tonight. So they told them, again, this guy is bleeding from the face and the mouth, needs 55 stitches in his face. They told him to go find a hotel and come back tomorrow.
No. Okay. Yes. That's absurd. All right.
And so, yeah, now it's like, wait, what?
That should be against the law. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. How do you tell somebody that's bleeding? I get that. Look, I had to wait over 8 hours with a broken wrist,
right,
in the waiting room. I get that. And I just sat there with my arm dangling off a table because that was the only comfortable position. But they didn't tell me go get a hotel and come back tomorrow. Like he's not from here. I'm from out of town. I got injured in a game. I need a doctor.
Yeah.
Well, the question I would have is, you're a professional athlete and you've got a team representative there. Was there no other hospital available? Can we not get an Uber to another hospital? Can we not get a taxi to another hospital and get in their ER waiting list? Because I don't know what's going on here, but it's not acceptable to be told come back tomorrow.
Okay. Well, yes, that is certainly an extreme story, but that seems
doctors,
like
doctors later told Valimaki that had he listened to the hospital, he did not, by the way, he stayed there until he got treatment. Had he listened to them and gone to the hotel and gone to sleep, there was a chance he would have suffocated in his own blood because it was an open wound in his mouth. Yeah. So after 5 hours after the NHLPA finally stepped in and he got the stitches, he also had a fractured bone, lost 3 teeth. This was a serious injury.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous that the NHL needs to have a better position. I think that's what they're looking at, is how do we prevent this from happening in the future? Because this is unacceptable. This is.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with them looking into this, but it seems to me like this is a hospital issue. This is not necessarily a hockey issue. But
I believe that sounds right. And I don't think the doctors at the arena could have handled this. I think it's you got to go to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure.
So, but I think what awful. Maybe what should happen, if I can offer a suggestion as a lay person. The team doctor or a team doctor should go with him and tell the doctors there, this is what happened and this is what he needs. This guy cannot just go home.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. A couple of minor trades to tell you about. Seattle Kraken acquire veteran forward Tomas Tatar from the Colorado Avalanche for a fifth round pick in 2024. That's certainly a name player on the move. The Canucks sent Jason Studnicka to the San Jose Sharks for a sixth round pick in 2024 and defenseman Nick Cizik, which I may or may not have pronounced properly. Sorry, Nick. Never heard.
Probably
of
not.
C-I-C-E-K. Anyway.
It's pronounced Nextash.
Random shots. Carolina Hurricanes placed veteran goalie Antti Raanta on waivers. He cleared waivers and was assigned to Chicago in the AHL. Aaron Dell has joined speaking of goaltenders.
I thought they called up Uncle Raanta.
Aaron Dell has joined the Hurricanes on a tryout. So we mentioned earlier that Frederick Anderson cleared to start resuming activities because of a blood clot issue. So it's Pyotr Kochetkov right now and looking for some depth there. Aaron Dell gets a call from the Hurricanes.
Hard to believe nobody with all the goaltending issues around the league wanted Antti Raanta. Clears waivers. I mean, I get he has a contract, but my goodness.
Nolan Patrick, a name from the not too distant past, 25 years old, announced his retirement from hockey. Number 2 overall pick in 2017 by the Flyers. Had a lot of issues with severe concussions. He was with the Golden Knights for a little bit. But 25 years old, concussion issues. Nolan Patrick announcing his retirement from hockey.
Wow, that is unfortunate.
And Doug, did you see to close it out here? Although, do we have our upon further
after
review?
Further review, yes, we do.
After further review, Okay, we'll get to that in a moment. Did you see the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League has changed its name?
No.
They are still the QMJHL, but they are now known as the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe because that was always a bit confusing when you say Major Junior.
Jumbo Shrimp?
Yeah, exactly.
Although I do love Jumbo Shrimp.
I do not.
This is shrimp, but it's big and there's a lot of it. Yeah. Give it to me. Well, let's get to after further review, because I couldn't care less about the QMJHL's name. I couldn't care less that the team is struggling.
Yeah, I saw it was the anniversary of that the other day.
God bless. Again, giving a animated player a hot mic. You never know.
Or a drunk.
A severely person. Inebriated.
Yeah, he kind of got thrown under the bus a little bit there, don't you think? Kind of a little bit.
Oh, 100%.
It's like,
he didn't say anything outrageous.
Clearly, I'm guessing if he was breathing, you could tell.
Yeah,
guy is sauced.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he should not be on here.
Yeah, Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Namath telling a woman he wanted to kiss her on live air.
Yeah,
as she was trying to report
her. She was trying to interview him about the Jets struggling, and he couldn't have cared less. He was interested in getting to know her a little better.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the after further review.
And let's start in the Atlantic Division, where Eddie, surprisingly, they've given up 115 goals this season. That is absolute worst in their division and one of the worst totals in the entire NHL. And as a result, it is goaltending and defense that is going to keep the Tampa Bay Lightning from being a true Stanley Cup contender this season.
I'm going to overturn that call.
Based on what?
Well, I mean, Andre Vasilevsky missed a significant amount of time.
He did, but he has not been great since he came back.
I'm going to say he rounds into form. I'm going to say the issue with the goaltending has been corrected at this point with him coming back, if he stays healthy.
He's well off his career averages. He's got a .904 save percentage and a .283 goals against.
Well, assuming he's not back while playing hurt, and I don't think they would do that. I'm pretty sure they would not do that. But I think they'll be okay. I think they'll wind up in the plus column as far as goal differential at the end of the year. So I guess I'm overturning that call.
All right. I think spends more to their offense. They've got 111 goals, which is the tops in their division, but their defense is just the reason they lose games. My goodness. Let's go to the Metropolitan Division, where we mentioned in the standings, they are in second place. And when you look at their roster, there's no reason this team should be in second place. In contrast to the team I just mentioned, the Tampa Bay Lightning, this team is second best in their division and third best in the entire conference in defense in giving up goals. And as a result, you and I need to eat some crow, because John Tortorella is a Jack Adams finalist for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Oh, that call is absolutely confirmed. I mean, when you look at the biggest surprises in the NHL, the Flyers are, I'm thinking, who else is there, really? There are some disappointments as far as
surprises. Arizona is surprising.
Arizona is doing better than expected, but I thought they could be in a wild card hunt this year.
Yep. They're not second in their division like Philadelphia is.
I mean, the Islanders are a bit of a surprise. The Capitals hanging around a playoff spot are a bit of a surprise, but no one is a bigger surprise to me than the
Vancouver?
Philadelphia Flyers. No, not even Vancouver. So, and usually, you know how these things go when it comes to coach of the year. Whoever had the biggest turnaround or was unexpected, usually that coach will win it or at least be a finalist. I will absolutely confirm that call. John Tortorella will be a Jack Adams Award finalist, barring some sort of cataclysmic disaster.
Yep, and well-deserved, because we openly mocked that hire and decision to keep him, and we have been proven wrong. He has been doing fantastic work with that roster. Let's go to the Western Conference and start in the Central Division, where Eddie, I'm going to stick on the same theme here of goals allowed, goals against kind of thing. And this team leads the entire Central Division in defense in giving up the fewest goals by far. And I talked about the heater that their goalie's been on this past month. Connor Hellebuck is going to be a Vezina finalist. He's back. He's a former Vezina winner, and he's back as a Vezina finalist this season.
I would, yes, the call is confirmed. I saw them play against my LA Kings recently, was very impressed with them. I think there was a stat at the time, I don't know if it's still in the running, I think it was like 17 straight games allowing three or fewer goals. That's going to win you some hockey games.
Yep.
Especially in today's NHL where scoring is up. So very impressed with, I mean, look, Rick Bonus went in there and kind of cracked the whip on these guys, did some things that was a bit controversial, some things that were unpopular, but in the end, he and his staff have obviously done a very, very good job. And yeah, they're playing some good defense. That'll take you places in the NHL. You can allow less than three goals a game. So yeah, I will confirm that call.
And we end in the Pacific Division, where the San Jose Sharks have allowed 128 goals this season. The other team that I want to talk about have allowed 68 in 28 games this season. And they have a goal differential, second best in the league, of plus 33. The 68 is by far the fewest in the NHL, by the way, in goals allowed. Eddie, your LA Kings, upon further review, have the best defense and goaltending in the NHL.
Well, certainly if you're looking at just the starting goaltender, yes. David Rittich was called up, by the way, the old veteran, to replace Felix Copley.
Goalies are like relief pitchers, man. They just they're always going to get work.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at the names we've mentioned. Michael Hutchinson, sure. James Reimer.
Aaron Dell.
Aaron Dell and Michael David Rittich. My goodness.
And he almost got a shutout against the Sharks. Now, granted, it was the Sharks. But to your point, I heard a quote from, I believe it was the Montreal broadcasters talking about the LA Kings. I thought it was a really creative and accurate depiction or description of the Kings' defense, and that they are like a boa constrictor or some sort of snake that will wrap you up and lock you down and eventually beat you, you know, succumbing to them smothering you defensively.
Right.
They play great team defense. It's they've got this 1-3-1 setup that they use, and they know it well. And obviously Cam Talbot has been a very key part of that as well, but their penalty kill was not good last year. They worked on it this season. It was like their number one thing they wanted to address. And now they're second in the NHL. So the PK is working. The goaltender is doing, having a great unexpected season. And just that team defense is there night in and night out. And that's something, you know, when you look at teams that could have success in the playoffs, I mean, that defense is, that's not something that can go into a slump usually, right? If you can play that team defense consistently, that's going to help out a lot. So, yeah, I've been obviously very thrilled with the way the Kings have played. They do have a lot of talent offensively, but it is their defense that is the reason why they're having a nice season so far.
But the call is that they have the best defense and goaltending in the NHL.
That's kind of tough. Boston has certainly a better tandem in net. If something happens, you know, to Ullmark, you've got Swayman there. It's not going to be the case with the Kings. They have the number one penalty kill in the NHL. Does Boston? I think you can make a compelling case for them. Boy, they're right there. But I'm going to overturn that call. I'm going to say I can't say that definitively. They're in the conversation, but I think Boston's right there as well.
All right. That is this week's After Further Review, where I put Eddie on the spot as the replay official, and he makes the call on my hot takes in each division. And now we go to the second period, where we will hear from Jeff Ponder on the booing of Jordan Kyrou. Did he boo? Was he one of the ones booing him? We will find out.
Stay tuned. Time of the second period here on the Puck Podcast. And as usual, we are happy to have a special guest. And it's always a good time when we can welcome in not only friend of the show, but friend Jeff Ponder. He is one of the hosts of Let's Go Blues Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at jponder94. And of course, he's here to talk about the St. Louis Blues and not the fourth head coaching change of the season, which we talked about in the first period, but the third head coaching change so far this season, and that would be with the St. Louis Blues. Before that, though, Jeff, hey, how are you, and what's going on with you?
Very good. You know, I didn't think there was anything Blues related to talk about when you asked me. I'm like, man, nothing is going on here in St. Louis, so I don't get it. But no, it's been a crazy week or so for Blues fans and for hockey. But you know, overall things are good. Holiday season, gearing up for a couple days off, which is always nice. You don't get a ton of time off there, Eddie, do you?
We have the typical paid holidays. I was a little disappointed to learn, and it's weird because of the hours I work. What day is what day? You know what I mean? So We have our big main family Christmas dinner on the night of Christmas Day, and because I work overnights, even though it's technically the 26th of December, really, because I have 1 hour, I work at 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. So, but me working, I technically have Christmas Day off, but I am going into work for the 26th, which I didn't know until I saw the schedule. So it is likely I will have to leave the festivities of the big family dinner. Now, the food will have been consumed and, you know, but it usually goes on deep into the night. There's a big to do. So some of the more fun things I'll probably will be missing out on or having to leave straight from there to work. So that was a little bit of a bummer. Yeah.
That's a shame. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had to deal with that since I was in retail. I remember back in the day working for Best Buy and having to go to bed at like 10. They're like, what are you doing? You're going to bed already? Yeah, I got to be at work at 3. So I'm going to go ahead and get some shut eye. So, yeah, don't miss those days. But that's a shame. But at least you get most of the day off still. And like you said, the best part is the dinner. So at least you'll get to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's true. I may miss out on the white elephant gift thing, which is always a bit of a hoot. But anyway, let's get to the St. Louis Blues. Let me start off with this. Give me what your expectations were for the St. Louis Blues going into the season and where they were in relation to that when the coaching change was made recently.
So my expectation is this team will be battling for a playoff spot. I think actually Eddie and you and I may have even discussed this when I was on over the summer. I thought this is a team that might surprise some people. I know a lot of the pundits had them finishing last in the NHL, which I was like, you think they're going to be worse than the Blackhawks? But okay.
No, that's surprising.
Yeah, that shocked me as well. A lot of people had picked Craig Berube to be the first coach fired. I didn't agree with that either. I thought he's going to get a pretty long leash because we all know this roster is not phenomenal. So I thought that, you know, this team going in, I thought playoff team would be amazing, but I think we're going to see this team on the outside just looking in, maybe missing the playoffs last couple days of the season, maybe even the last week or two. And then when Craig Berube, fast forward to early December, Craig Berube gets fired. Blues were 12-13-1. I said this on Let's Go Blues Radio, if you had told me that the Blues would be firing Craig Berube when the team was 12-13-1, I would have called you an insane person. Because I thought, if they're 12-13-1, they're basically exceeding expectations for me. I just thought this team, at very best, again, would be a very last, late-minute wild card team. So I thought 12-13-1, that's right where I'd see them basically having a decent season. But as you know, I'm sure, and as a lot of listeners know, Doug Armstrong, GM of the Blues, did say it's not exactly the record that he was unimpressed with. It was how they got there. And it's funny because that's kind of what I've said Whenever we look at on Let's Go Blues Radio, whenever we look at like the games, you know, we report on the games weekly. So we look at them at about 3 to 4 games per week, and we say, okay, 4-game chunk. How are they going to go? 2-2 probably. Okay. And then I'll look at it, and let's say they're playing the Coyotes, the Kings, the Sharks, and the Golden Knights. I'd be like, okay, wins against the Coyotes and Sharks. No, it'd be the opposite. They get blown out by the Sharks and the Coyotes and then beat the Kings and the Golden Knights. And it's like, how is that even possible? But I think it's just the way that this team was kind of playing down to its competition and playing bad against its competition, the lesser teams in the league. That, I think, is what was concerning to Armstrong, and that's why he made the move.
Well, you've kind of answered my next two questions. One of was, what did you think of the timing of it, since they were just 1 point out of a playoff spot? So you've kind of answered that. And you've also answered my other question, which was, and Doug and I talked about this on last week's show, for a coach that had recently won a Stanley Cup, right, 4 years ago, not only did he win a Stanley Cup, it was the first Stanley Cup in the history of the franchise. And again, you're just 1 point out of a wild card spot. It certainly seemed like a quick decision, I guess. We both thought, and I'm sure you agree, I know you do because you just mentioned it, that Craig Berube would get more of a rope, right? He would get more of the benefit of the doubt, considering what he had done for the franchise and not that long ago. Why do you think that wasn't the case?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and I will say this until the day I'm on my deathbed. The 1920 season, the year after they won, I think they win the Stanley Cup, if not for COVID-19. For those that might not remember, that team was, I mean, just a powerhouse. They had just acquired Justin Falk. Marco Scandella was brought in later in the season. And it just looked like this team, and let's remember that was a younger Marco Scandella. This team just looked destined. Binnington was having another decent season, not the season he had his first year, which we'll never see that replicated. And, you know, they just, the Tarasenko was hurt, but he, you know, he played well early in the year. O'Reilly, Shen, guys like that were having monster years, and then COVID-19 hit in March, and then they came into the bubble and they did not look like the same team. So you really think of that 1920 and saying that was the last time they really competed for a cup. And then you could even make the case that in 2021, 22, they took Colorado to 6 games the year they won the cup, and they probably put up the best fight that any team did against Colorado. So yeah, we're not far removed from this team competing. And the other caveat to this that seemed odd is that they made, rightfully so, made some coaching changes to the assistant coaches over the summer, fired Mike Van Rijn and Craig McTavish, and brought in Mike Weber and Michael Babcock, the son of Mike Babcock, brought them in. And the whole idea is Craig Berube was part of the decision-making process to bring in these assistant coaches and said, these are the right fit. These are the guys I want behind the bench with me. You're only going to give him 28 games to gel with these two new coaches, and before you let him go and then you bring in somebody else. And it's just, to me, it was just such a backwards decision, because if you're going to make, if you think, and you know, barring like a 16 game losing streak or something, if you're going to make a coaching change that early in a season, wouldn't you fire the coach over the summer? So that way you can bring in somebody else who then can hire his assistants. Now you've brought in two assistants and then bringing in another guy who basically needs to learn from them how the coaching is going. So it just seemed like a very backwards decision. And I agree with you 100%. I thought he'd get a much longer leash. This roster cannot compete with the rosters Berube's had before. Again, that 19 team was great. 20 team was great. You know, clearly the roster construction is a little bit of an issue. There is a little bit of an effort issue, which I think goes into the coaching a little bit from some of his players. But at the same time, it just felt so odd, the timing of it. You'd think maybe you give him until January and see where they're at. But again, Armstrong quoted that He just thought that the effort wasn't there for some games. And, you know, we all know, I think you guys have even said this exact quote, it's easier to fire the coach than all the players.
Well, the man who made the decision is GM Doug Armstrong. He's been there, I believe, since 2010. Now, of course, he was the GM of the team when he fired Mike Yeo and brought in Craig Berube, who, of course, engineered the amazing turnaround, and the team went on to win the Stanley Cup. So you can keep that in mind as far as moves he made that were obviously good. I believe he went over the 1,000 game mark this season for general manager of the team. So how much of this move do you think was him protecting himself? And what is his job status at this point?
I really think this is Doug Armstrong's job until he doesn't want it anymore. Owner Tom Stillman has basically sung his praises since day one. I think another reason he, and for those that may not know, Tom Stillman is a local businessman. He was a minority owner before he became majority owner, and is a guy kind of known for not being one of the richest owners in the NHL. And so the belief is that the reason they're going with a retool and not a rebuild is because they need that playoff revenue. So they're trying to make this quick pivot to still be a relevant team and not have to go through a full rebuild. And Stillman, from what I understand, him and Armstrong have a great relationship. Armstrong's on board with his vision. And so that's why we're seeing Armstrong still here. I will say 100% this roster construction, the defensive issues they're having, a lot of it stems from contracts. I do think that in a normal situation, you would have seen the GM let go before the coach. This is the fifth coach under Doug Armstrong's watch. But again, I just think owner Tom Stillman is happy with the results for the most part. I mean, you think about it, before last season, the Blues had only missed the playoff one time in Doug Armstrong's tenure, which is crazy. I think they were the winningest Western Conference team, again, before last season, under his tenure in the time he's been GM. So there's reason to believe that Doug Armstrong is a great GM, because he is. But a lot of the issues we're having now and we're seeing now, you can't just blame coaching or player effort. This team is just, it's not up to snuff where they were even 2-3 years ago.
So obviously the coaching change was the big news, but there was another big story involving the Blues that piggybacked off of that. And that was Jordan Kyrou, forward for the Blues, homegrown player, was asked about his relationship with the former head coach, and Jordan Kyrou is not having a great year. And he said, quote, "I've got no comment. He's not my coach anymore," end quote. The next Blues game was a home game, and Jordan Kyrou was booed by the home fans when he touched the puck. He was asked about that afterwards and was fighting back tears when he commented on that. Obviously, didn't think his comments initially, I assume, were going to be what they were. And didn't expect that kind of a reaction, and clearly it hurt him. So let me ask you, what did you think initially about his comments of "I've got no comment, he's not my coach anymore"? How did that sit with you?
So if this were coming from a guy that's having a good year, let's say even Jake Neighbors, who's got 10 goals on the year, one of the leaders for the Blues right now in goals, Robert Thomas, another one having a good season here in St. Louis. If one of those guys gets asked and they say the same exact thing Jordan Kyrou does, I think they get a pass. But Kyrou has, let's face it, he's kind of become a whipping boy here in St. Louis. Even when he was putting up 70 points the last two seasons, a lot of people compare him to Brett Hull in the sense that he's very good offensively when he has the puck, and he can create goal scoring opportunities. But he's lazy. He's been in the past. He's been lazy on the back check. He's lazy coming back into the end or back into the defensive zone. He loses the puck along the boards a lot. But I will say, I think this season, even though offensively he has taken a huge hit, personally, I think he has very much improved his overall game. We're seeing him back check more. We're seeing him fight a little bit more for the pucks in the corners. We're seeing him not give up on plays. It's just offensively, it's just not clicking for him this year so far. But I think that was part of it, the fact that he's just struggling offensively, and this fan base expects him to be putting up a lot more points. Now, having said that too, Greg Berube, and the comment here is always, Greg Berube will never have to pay for a beer in St. Louis ever again. I'm sure just like you said with your Stanley Cup team the first year the Kings won it, all those players, they can walk into any bar and there's a Kings fan there, they're getting free drinks all night. Like, it's the same thing here in St. Louis with Berube, Binnington, O'Reilly. These guys brought the Blues their first Stanley Cup. So Craig Berube is loved here, beloved. You mentioned Jordan Kyrou getting booed. Well, before the game, and don't ask me why the in-game presentation team decided to do this, they showed the Doug Armstrong press conference before the next game on the big screen. And the mountainous sounds of boos that came over the entire crowd was deafening. It was louder than anything Kyrou heard. So not Kyrou's not the only one, but I will say his comments, I wasn't a fan of him either. I thought there's a right way to say things in a wrong way. And I'm with you guys that I want to see more personality from players, but that was just bad timing from Jordan Kyrou. This fan base was very upset, and it's been pretty obvious if you watch Blues games, Kyrou and Berube probably did not get along. We've seen them yell at each other on the bench. Berube's called him out to the media about lack of desire, that kind of stuff. And so this was kind of already known, but then when he said, I think even if he just says no comment, it's not an issue. But because he said no comment, he's not my coach anymore, that just sat wrong with Blues fans. And so they let him hear it. And, you know, and again, I think you guys agree with this as well. Those people at that game, they paid for their tickets. They have every right to boo a player if they feel it's justified. As long as they're not throwing batteries or throwing other things on the ice, I don't care. But yeah, I will say it was a learning moment for Jordan Kyrou. I thought after the game, when they interviewed him, that is exactly what people wanted. There were some people who were upset with Blues fans afterward saying, look what you did. You're making a potential superstar upset. I think that's what everybody wanted. They wanted him to see that what he said was not okay. And I think he learned his lesson. And I don't know if we'll get into the next game or not, but I mean, it's pretty clear that when he came clean and said, listen, that's not what I meant. You know, I have great respect for him, and it hurt me to hear boos from my fan base. Hearing that was kind of justification for the crowd and saying he learned his lesson.
Well, next game, he scored a goal on a breakaway and he got cheered. So perhaps all is well that ends well going forward with
him.
Did
you hear his comments to the post-game interview over the Jumbotron?
I think he said something about how much he loves playing.
Yeah, he said, I love these guys. This is effing awesome. Valley Sports picked that up too.
Yeah, it wasn't effing awesome when he was being booed. So, but no. So we, Doug and I talked about this in the first period. And I wanted to get your quick comments on it. And look, obviously there are passionate fans in St. Louis, but it's not exactly New York or Philadelphia or some of those places. So a little bit, I guess, surprised maybe at the reaction, but and again, maybe I'm forgetting. I can't recall ever booing a player that I've got when I've gone to a game because of something that he said. I may, you know, I'm not a big booer. I've said this before on the show, but I have booed. Mostly it's over, you know, if some guy drops a pass that's right in his hands, or, you know, if it's, you know, I'm kind of going football here, but if it's like third and eight and you run a dive play for a yard, I might boo the play call, something like that. But I don't know that I can't recall booing a player specifically, like singling him out because of something that he said. Have you, recall doing, and would, if you were at that game, would you have booed Jordan Kyrou?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will say, I think what I would have done, because the original boos came when he was announced as a starter. Drew Bannister starting him in that game, I think, was a mistake. Unfortunately, that's like the first official decision Drew Bannister made as a head coach in the NHL. But Yeah, I thought, oh man, that was a bad call, because I think if you just kind of read the room, read Twitter, read Facebook, you would see that there were some angry, passionate fans even saying, I'm going to the game tonight. I'm going to boo him. I do think I might have, don't judge me, people. I might have let out a boo when they announced him as a starter. Because at that point, that was, to me, that's more a Doug Armstrong slight too. Because you know he hears it. Kyrou may not even hear it until after the game. Now, booing him every time he touched the puck, that was surprising to me. I was shocked that St. Louis did that. And again, I have no problem with it. If that's how this fan base wants to act and wants to be upset with him and show their displeasure, more power to him. I just don't think I would have participated if I were there. Now, I was there on Saturday when he scored that breakaway goal. And I will say that when he took the ice the first time, he got a nice applause. I did partake in that. And I also did, it was a very, the goal that he scored. That was one of the loudest I've heard Scott Trade since, Enterprise, since the Game 7 watch party. Because the crowd wanted to throw a little extra into that. So that was pretty nice. But no, I don't think I would have. I don't know. I just would have booed him, I think, when he wasn't off the ice, or when he wasn't on the ice. When he was on, I think I just would have ignored it.
Final one for you, Jeff. And again, we're here with Jeff Ponder from letsgobluesradio.com. Drew Bannister has been named interim head coach. I believe that Doug Armstrong has said that the search is ongoing for the next head coach. Does Drew Bannister have a chance? I mean, I assume if he hits it out of the park, then they would reconsider, but it seems like they're not really considering him. What's been the talk? Is there a name or two? Is there anyone that you would like to see the Blues get, if in fact Drew Bannister doesn't do something amazing? Who's the next head coach of the Blues, I guess, next season?
That's a tough question. Let's all just hope it's not Mike Babcock.
yes.
I will say I do, you know, I think Drew Bannister has as much of a chance as anybody. I mean, he already knows the organization. Clearly he's already been trusted, with pretty important task of getting this team back on track, which he's done. This interview is being recorded on December 19th, Tuesday night. They got a game tonight against Tampa. We'll see how they do. But as of right now, he is 2-0 as a Blues head coach. He's made some pretty good roster decisions. Again, I think they're going to give him a little bit of a leash here. But I don't think, I think if something becomes available, if I know Doug Armstrong is already starting his search for the next head coach. I think he even started it before he fired Berube, to be honest. But I honestly don't know who that guy could be. We've seen a couple other coaches let go this year. Handy Strickland, I don't know if you guys have had him on, but we've had him on Let's Go Blues Radio. He's a St. Louis Blues reporter and the Stricken Cam podcast. He seems to think that Joel Quenneville might get another chance as a head coach. I'm not a fan of that, as someone who loved Joel Quenneville when he was a Blues coach after the Chicago debacle. I would never be okay with him coming back to the NHL, to be quite honest. But I don't know. It really is up in the air. And I think if Bannister takes this and runs with it, I mean, you think about it, the last interim coach the Blues had was Craig Berube, and it led them to a Stanley Cup. And I'm not saying Drew Bannister is going to do that with this squad, but if he can right the ship and get them into the playoffs, I could see him at least getting a 1 or 2 year contract as a official head coach.
All right. That is Jeff Ponder, one of the hosts of Let's Go Blues Radio and a longtime friend of the show. If you are a St. Louis Blues fan, obviously you need to check out his podcast and follow him on Twitter. He's at JPonder94. Jeff, it's always a pleasure. Happy holidays and appreciate your time as always.
Yes. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year to Eddie, Doug, Chris Kohler, the entire Puck Podcast family, and of course, all your listeners. Love being able to help out when I can. And everyone have a great new year.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. We've got plus minus coming up in just a minute, but we have your emails as well. Before we get to that, Doug, I apologize for not asking you to check this. If we have any new patrons on Patreon, if you could do that maybe real quick. Okay, no new patrons this week, but we have a lot of continuing patrons that support us, and we greatly appreciate their support. If you would like to join the people that support us on Patreon, it is patreon.com/puckpodcast. And thank you to anyone who has ever contributed and been a supporter of us on Patreon, past, present, future. We greatly appreciate it. Also, a shout out to our friend Dave at Tally Hockey Jerseys, tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com, where you can access the Puck Podcast team store. Doug, I don't know if you got a box, but I did get some new hats.
I did. Got two very nice new hats.
Yeah, we got some new material, some stretchy material that they're made of now. So we have a new new style of hat for you guys to check out. And of course, there's now four styles of Puck Podcast jerseys. There's a new one out there. So go check it out, especially the holidays coming up. Tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. There's the Puck Podcast team store. You can check that out. And of course, if you have any need for any custom hockey jerseys, there's only one person you need to see, and that's our friend Dave at tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. All right, let's get to the emails. Doug, do the honors.
Charlie in Corona, California, not too far from us, says, "Hey guys, this is a non-hockey related email. It's about things you talked about in the off-ice report. A fun idea for the Patreon subscribers would be a Doug and Eddie holiday album." No.
What?
Nobody would think that was fun. Charlie would, clearly. But Eddie and I are both tone deaf.
Do you have a favorite Christmas song, Doug?
Probably. They're all newish. You know, the old stuff I don't like. So
I'm, really? I'm the complete opposite. I don't like any new stuff. I like all the old stuff.
Oh, I like the Do They Know It's Christmas Time, the one from the 80s. I like the Wham! Last Wham! Christmas.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Have you heard about the Whamageddon, the game, that unofficial game that they play in Europe?
No, I have not.
The challenge is to go as long as you can, but ideally the entire holiday season without hearing Wham's Last Christmas. If you hear it, you're out. You're on the honor system and there is no prize. Interesting. And 60,000 Brits were pissed off at being eliminated when it was played at a soccer match they were at. And that eliminated them from the Whamageddon game.
I smell conspiracy there.
Yeah.
Right?
Seems like dirty pool. But no, I like those two. Yeah, the old ones are just... Yeah, I got no.
Wow, I'm old school, man. Christmas song, Nat King Cole, number one. Bing Crosby, all those old classics. Those are my favorite Christmas songs.
All right. We continue.
Oh, apologies. Jump the gun.
That was the Patreon. So we're not going to do a holiday album. Although if Eddie wants to sing the standards,
I for the right price, absolutely.
Oh, that's true. If there's a couple commas in there, I'll sing whatever you want. Number two, Eddie, you and your wife found a mouse. I recently found a small lizard in my house. I tried to catch it. It snuck behind a bookcase and remained in hiding for a couple of days. It eventually showed up again, and I was able to scoop it up with a Disneyland-like broom and trash scooper and put it outside. I don't know that my wife would be able to sleep knowing there was a lizard in the house we had not caught. We would have to remove that bookcase and get to that lizard. You, Eddie, if that mouse had gone behind a bookcase, is Karen just going to bed?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
There would be a hunt for it, and we would have to exhaust all avenues of searching for it before we would be able to give it up, especially when I leave and go to work and she's here by herself. So no.
Yeah. I mean, I think if let's say it was midnight, she sees a mouse in the house, it goes behind a bookcase. She can't get to it. She can't move the bookcase. I think she would just say F it and go get a hotel for the night. The house belongs to the mouse for the evening until Eddie gets back. What do you think? Would she find a way to get that mouse?
I don't think she's going to go searching for the mouse, though. She would probably go to her mother's house or something.
And the final question from Charlie is a question for Doug. I may have asked this before, but out of curiosity, who are your current favorite comedians, if any? Thanks as always for the show. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, Charlie in Corona, California. Well, the current comedians, much like music, I'm not up on the new stuff. So the newish comedians, I'm not following too closely. Anthony Jeselnik is still a favorite. I love watching him. Ricky Gervais, I still like watching him when he does stand up. Chappelle is still funny to me. It's the classics. There's not too many new people, but those are people that are still performing and out on tour. So when I see them, when I see new videos, I like watching them and watch their specials. So that would be it. Thank you as always for your email, Charlie, and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you and your family as well.
All right. My wife has returned home and is chastising me for garbage cans outside. Our next email comes from Adam in North Jersey. He says, hey guys, last week Doug asked if I think the Devils would like Mackenzie Blackwood back in net for New Jersey. And while beggars can't be choosers, I'm not sure it's a great fit. In the end, Blackwood did not seem to be happy with the club and situation. I'm not sure if he's a big step up from the rotating cast of the Devils have now, but if he promises league average goaltending, I'm willing to take him back. So we shall see.
Well, I guarantee he would promise that. It's whether or not he can deliver it. He's not going to say, I'm going to give you crappy goaltending, but there you go. Next email comes from our friend Tyler. He is in St. Louis, and he says, hey, fellas, new listener, Tyler here from St. Louis. Thank you, Tyler, and I hope you enjoyed the second period with Jeff Ponder talking about the Blues. He said, I had some thoughts to share with you on the Berube situation. Your opinions may have changed since more player statements have come out, but I somewhat disagree with the idea that he's a Stanley Cup winning coach and deserves more slack. To me, it's not just that our record has been lackluster this year. The systems have not been working regardless. Our penalty kill scores more than our power play. The structure of the team seems to be falling apart, and comments from players like Kyrou and Binnington have pushed me to believe that he was not giving the job his all. Further context, let's start with Kyrou's comment, I've got no comment, he's not my coach anymore. This probably came off colder than he intended, but I think it's revealing that he had so little to say about the coach that took him to a Stanley Cup win. Next, Binnington, who had more to say, quote, I think the message was, if you're not here to be great or do what it takes to win, sacrifice for your team, then get out of here. We've got to be proud to wear that blue note jersey and proud to be part of this organization and play for this city. If you're not, just get out of here because we're not wasting time. These are special years being able to play in the NHL. It's a privilege. It's not going to be forever. So I think a good amount of us, we understand that. We want to make the most of our time, end quote. Again, revealing that Binnington's comments seem so cold, to me it sounds like he's implying Berube didn't have the drive to win anymore and wasn't bringing the same drive to the team that he has in years past. I think the team's organization's relationship with Berube had been deteriorating behind the scenes for the past couple of years, and we are just now starting to see it. According to Doug Armstrong, St. Louis deserves a, quote, more consistent effort, end quote. And some fingers are pointed at him being the problem, though, so you can take that or leave it. I've also heard some friends make comments about how his style is outdated compared to the direction the team is going now, and I honestly think it's a combination of all things that led to the firing. Berube and the Blues were going in two separate directions, and that led to a loss of confidence on both sides. I also think the Blues are hoping the new coach bump that we've been talking about takes them back into a playoff spot. If last night's game against Ottawa is any indication, they made the right decision. The team already seems to be playing harder for an interim coach than they were for Berube, and I think that's a reflection of where the relationship was at. That is Tyler in St. Louis, and we very much appreciate, we love hearing from the fans of the team that follow him on a daily basis to get their take, and so very much appreciate that. Thank you for that, Tyler.
Let's move over to Michael Smith. He is in London, Ontario, and he says, dear Doug and Eddie, watching the Ducks and Rangers, I was very surprised to learn that Chris Kreider is now third place all time as a New York Ranger in goals scored, 281. You were not the only one surprised, Michael. We mentioned that earlier. While always a name when looking at a team, I would never have considered him as a historical player to a pretty historical team. A little bit of digging shows that more than a few current NHL players hold some hefty home team records, like Sebastian Aho climbing steadily while being second all-time for the Canes with 229, following Eric Staal's 322 goals. Mark Scheifele's first in goals at 283, followed by Kyle Connor at 226 in third. And lastly, the Lightning, first, fourth, and fifth spots being held by Stamkos, Kucherov, and Braden Point, 529, 296, and 231 respectively. While the latter aren't so surprising, I did find a few records that are. If you'll play along with me, have the other guests knowing I only chose active players with names that will probably never come up as team legends. So I guess, Doug, you're going to have to play the role of guessing here. These are current players
that are
still active. Who sits fourth all-time in games played for a goaltender for the Philadelphia Flyers? It's not Ilya Bryzgalov.
No, I know that. Fourth all-time? And he's an active player?
Yeah.
That is a tough question because I'm going through my mind and the guys that went that were there for a long time. I'll guess Martin Jones.
Carter Hart at 200.
Already?
Yeah, apparently so, according to Michael.
Wow.
For the Tampa Bay Lightning, who is a sixth place all-time in goals scored, an active player?
Sixth place all-time, I'll say Alex Killorn.
That is correct.
Bing, bing.
For your Ducks with 198. Yeah. And finally, for the San Jose Sharks, who is sixth all-time in assists? Active player, still playing for the Sharks. I give you a hint.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Erik Karlsson. Sixth all-time in assists for the Sharks.
Yeah.
Hurdle.
No, Mark-Edouard Vlasic, 288.
Oh, boy.
I guess he's still
there's a guy they're not going to celebrate when he comes back.
Wow.
He's killing him.
Michael says, lastly, it was amazing to hear from Chris Kohler. Would be great to have him on for a show again, even if he takes on the role of Phil Esposito, sits in the back seat while you two are talking and just chirps in with weird noises and a few words now and again. That was Michael in London, Ontario.
How about some of my favorite stats are those kinds of things where you see like the all-time franchise leader is some ridiculously low number. And one of them out of hockey, the Padres have never had a good home run hitter. And proof of that is their all-time career home run hitter, Eddie, has 163 home runs for the Padres.
That's not it. A lot.
That's like three good years by guys these days.
Who is it, by the way?
Somebody named Nate Colbert.
Oh, my. Never heard of him.
Right. Nate Colbert, who last played in 1976, still holds the Padres' career record for home runs.
Goodness.
And then going even further back, the Washington Commanders, the all-time leader in touchdown passes for them as a franchise, is not Joe Theismann, is not even Sonny Jurgensen, who, by the way, was the toughest SOB you've ever heard of in the NFL. Because that dude not only played as a all-pro quarterback, but played defense and punted. Think about that now. Patrick Mahomes now in on defense.
He was the Phil Kessel of the NFL. Because if you saw him walking the streets, you would say there is no way that man is a professional athlete. He's got a little gut. He's balding.
Not only a professional athlete, he was exceptional.
Yeah, Hall of Fame.
But the all-time leader for the Washington Commanders in passing touchdowns is Sammy Baugh from over 70 years ago.
No face mask back then. Slinging Sammy.
My goodness. Like how have they not had a quarterback? And they've had great quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks come through there. My goodness. Just shows you some stuff. And so Chris Kreider, God bless him. Surprising. I liked that email. That was a very timely one from Michael. Thank you for that. Our next email comes from my cousin, Grant. And he says, hey, Eddie and cousin Doug. Just following up on an email, I believe, from Alex. He said he was going to the Avalanche Senators game in Denver. He said he would be sporting the Puck Podcast jersey. I'll keep an eye out for him at the game. I'll be in my Puck Podcast jersey as well.
Oh, we got to get a meeting and a picture, guys. Come on.
Team store, first intermission, meet up.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Alex and Grant, we need a meet up outside the team store.
Yep,
send us
the picture. Send us
a picture. Fantastic.
Is that it from
That's
cousin
it.
Grant?
Okay. Grant. He just wanted to give a shout out to Alex to be on the lookout for doppelganger.
My final email comes from Jim the German, who I met in New York. He says, gentlemen, I will try not to ramble in this email, but I make no promises. Eddie, shame on you. Towards the beginning of the season, I asked people to suggest a player from their team to follow this season. Who did you suggest? He is no other than the best player to pick with a ton of talent, as long as he's interested, Pierre-Luc Dubois, or as he wants to be called now, living in Hollywood, PL. I'm glad I picked Quentin Byfield instead. Now, for trying to get to the last full NHL entry draft, you are letting Doug work on getting the two of you in, talking about going to the Sphere. He says, I'm sure Doug is more than capable, but aren't you part of the Locked On Network? Couldn't you reach out to that organization for assistance?
Yeah, Eddie.
The Puck Podcast has been around for damn near 20 years. What are you talking? This carries more
weight. Some fly-by-night organization like Locked On?
That's right. That's right. Now for Doug, I need your assistance.
All right.
We will all agree, except for the NHL, that the Department of Player Safety needs to be more consistent. Mm-hmm. What I need assistance with is understanding why it is that just because George Parros was a goon, he isn't qualified for his job. We can see that he isn't due to his lack of consistency, but not because of his role in the league as a player. You suggested that because he was a goon, he did not know how to play within the rules. I would disagree, not just because he was never fined or suspended while playing, as for most of that time, Colin the Clown was in charge. I took a look at how many penalties he had. 474 game career. Parros had 1,092 penalty minutes, including 150 fighting majors. That leaves 342 minor penalty minutes earned, or 171 minor penalties. With my poor math, that works out to be one penalty in almost every three games played. That's not bad, especially for a player who usually played against people with more talent than he and needed every advantage he could get. You suggested that a player who has won the Lady Bing Trophy would be better suited for the job. Would you want Paul Kariya in charge? He won the Lady Bing and had his career cut short due to multiple injuries, illegal hits and cross-checks. Or might he penalize due to the result and not the action? Personally, I would rather see a former referee in the position of handing out fines and suspensions. I would go on about Dylan Larkin's comments on suspensions and lack of a comment on team suspensions, but I don't want to ramble. Instead, I want to ask both of you for updates as I close this email. Eddie, how is the kitchen coming along? Doug, do you have your chickens yet? Thank you both for giving me at least one good laugh each week. And that is from Jim, the German. The kitchen is not been touched, Jim. I'm told that is going to happen soon, but there is no progress on the kitchen at this point, unfortunately.
Nor do we have chickens yet. That is a 2024 guarantee, but not to happen before the end of the year, unfortunately.
What will happen first? Repairs on the kitchen or the chickens?
Chickens.
Okay.
I don't like, sounds like your insurance company is dragging their heels.
Yeah, I was going to say chickens are in your hands. Working on the kitchen is not in my hands. So anyway.
Right. And especially completion of the kitchen. That's going to take some time. But let's get to his other question about George Parros. The reason is I feel like George comes at every incident from the view of the aggressor, the guy that made the hit, the guy that was the instigator, and can see it from their perspective because that was his role. I would 100% love Paul Kariya to be in charge because he's going to look at it from the perspective of people that are actually trying to play the game and score goals and would not give solace and sympathy to people that made dirty hits. And he would be like, man, I was a Hall of Fame player and I played my entire career. I never had to hit anybody like that. So you don't need to hit somebody like that. You don't need to stick your knee out. You don't need to cross-check somebody in the face or swing your stick. And that's dangerous. You're lucky he didn't get hurt. So Paul Kariya would be a great person to do it, in my opinion, or somebody like him. It should be a Lady Bing person because you're enforcing the rules. It should be somebody that made a career playing within the rules that is doling out the discipline. As for the referee, I'm not in favor of that. The referees are just... Nah. I want somebody that knows what it's like to play in the modern NHL and what it's like to react in the moment is part of that locker room discussion, part of the NHL. It should be somebody that just retired within the last 5 to 10 years and they should only have the job for 5 to 10 years and then move on to the next person that just recently retired. And it should always be a Lady Bing winner, in my opinion. Our last email comes from Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Gentlemen, hope you are well. Eddie, your story about saving Mr. Jingles brought back traumatic memories. Using your best Estelle Getty, picture it. Winnipeg, winter, 1997. I'm in my first pad after leaving home. I lay down sticky pads to catch the mice. One gets stuck, and I see that you're supposed to put it face down in the toilet to drown it. Not happening. I also think mice are cute, so I take it outside to try and pry it off the sticky pad to save it. I use chopsticks. By the time I'm done, all four limbs are lying in the red snow, and the torso remains attached to the pad. I was horrified, but not as much as Mr. Stumpy. Good Lord. Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, Lordy in heaven. That's awful. I don't want to read the rest of your email. I don't know what's coming, but if there's more to this story, good Lord.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk hockey, please. God help me. If Sidney Crosby retired today, he's undisputedly one of the greatest forwards of all time, and he just passed Mark Recchi for career points. I know Recchi played with enough stars to occupy their own wing of the Hockey Hall of Fame, from Mario Lemieux to Jaromir Jagr to Eric Lindros and John LeClair, but he still put up an otherworldly 1,500 points. That Crosby just passed him in career points really drives home how productive Recchi was, and it brings up an interesting criterion often used when evaluating a player's Hall of Fame candidacy. Did people pay to see them? On teams with so much talent, few fans paid to see specifically Mark Recchi, I am sure, but he is most deserving of his place in the hallowed hall. Let's also remember, Hart, he played in an era where goalies sucked and stood up and watched the puck go past him. He would not have gotten 1,500 points in today's game. No chance. And if Sidney Crosby went back in that era, he would have been Wayne Gretzky. He would have been putting up points at a ridiculous pace. He continues, in other news, I see Minnesota GM Bill Guerin is being investigated for verbal abuse of players. Anyone who followed his NHL career knows that this is no surprise. He's the epitome of the old school hockey phallus. Just ask Brent Draney, I don't know who the hell this player is. The star veteran, oh yeah, I remember this guy because I know what he did. This is the guy that Bill Guerin cross-checked during training camp. You remember that, Eddie?
I do, and if you want to hear about us talking about it, you can go back and find the show because I'm positive we did talk about that.
Yeah. We've got to get these dinosaurs out of the game. At least Mike Babschlong is gone forever. My goodness. I think Hart had some eggnog before he wrote this email. A little spiked eggnog. You were discussing the most lopsided trades since the show began. The Tanner Janot trade is indeed the dumbest I've ever seen in my lifetime. The worst, though, has to be the Patrick Waugh trade. Jocelyn Thibault, Martin Rutschinski, and Andrei Kovalenko for Mike Keane and the greatest goalie of all time. The Habs' hands were a bit tied, though, given the mitigating circumstances, but this won the Avs 2 cups. Perhaps the worst trade of all time took place in the 60s when the brilliant Milt Schmidt, GM of the Bruins, sent goalie Jack Norris, defenseman Gilles Marat, and forward Pitt Martin to Chicago for future Hall of Famer Phil Esposito, sniper Ken Hodge, and the solid forward Fred Stanfield. Two cups followed then, too. Finally, Doug suggested that I need to drop my shorts for a natural pants trick, as shorts are short for short pants. I want you to put your money where your mouth is then. Next time you have a wedding, wear a full suit with your most formal shorts instead of pants and see how Jackie feels. Well, if I was going at a wedding in Bermuda, that would be absolutely acceptable because that is the formal attire of Bermuda, the Bermuda shorts. Warm regards and sorry for the short email, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Hart, your story was horrific, but the rest of your email was solid as usual, and we thank you for your contribution on the weekly basis.
That does unfortunately remind me of a story from work. I may have shared this with you, but we had a bat fly into the studio on a couple of occasions. I don't know if it was the same bat or not, but we assumed it came from like the air vent or something. So it was flying around. I videotaped it. We were having a kind of a good time saying, there's a bat flying around our studio. So one of our producers decided, I'm going to catch that bat and release it into the wild. And so he had like a, there was like a plastic mail tub that, you know, and so he went to catch it with that. And he caught it and he brought it down and he was trying to like drag it over to the door.
Oh boy.
And, well,
he more bat.
He decapitated the bat in his attempts to save the bat. So yeah. Best Ozzy intentions. Osbourne. Best intentions sometimes don't work out that way.
No.
And that'll do it for the third. Oh, that's right. Silly me. It's time for plus minus.
Yeah. So we got a short week this coming week because of the holiday break. All teams are off Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So next week's show, we will only be recapping 4 days worth of games, which will make it an easier job for Eddie to get the recaps going. But let's take a look at the games that are remaining. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have had an interesting week. So they have in the past, and they have two games coming up this week, Eddie, at Buffalo, which is always a rivalry, and then a rematch against Columbus, the game they lost 6-5. I say over under, and I'm going to go with a solid 4 points. There's only under. I'll go 3.5 points is the over under on points they get in those two games.
I'll take the plus.
I was going to say that is it's a solid bet. The New York Islanders have been playing very well lately, and they have two games coming up this week as well, both on the road at Washington and at Carolina. Those are not easy games, both playoff caliber teams. I'll put the plus minus at 2.5 points for the Islanders.
I'm going to take the plus on that one as well.
Ah, encouraging for the New York Islanders fans out there. Let's go to the Winnipeg Jets, who we mentioned have been playing great defensively, and they have two home games coming up this week to close out their pre-Christmas schedule. They are home for the Red Wings and then home for the Bruins. Two very difficult games right there. But I will say again, 2.5 is the plus minus in points earned.
I'll go with the minus in that one.
All right. And then finally, in the Pacific Division, where the Seattle Kraken have been struggling after their Cinderella season last year, they come to Southern California to get some of our rainy weather. They brought the rain with them from Seattle, and they will play at your Kings and then at my Ducks. And I say they walk out of SoCal and into the Christmas break with 2.5 points in those two games.
I will take the minus in that one as well.
Very good. Then there we have it. That is plus minus for this week. And we will be back next week to see how we did and check in on some more plus minus fun at the end of the third period.
Is there somebody out there who's keeping track of all this, by the way, just for fun? Because
I don't know.
We don't usually give the results, which is fine by me because I'm probably not very good at it. But
yeah,
there's somebody out there keeping track of this. You want to send an email to do that, I guess. I
mean, where would they send that email, Eddie?
Feedback@puckpodcast.com is where they can send anything for us as far as emails, questions, comments, concerns.
Pictures of them meeting up with other listeners in Puck Podcast jerseys.
There you go. We also are on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast. We're on Twitter @puckpodcast. And again, if you'd like to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast.
Thanks. Merry Christmas to you, Eddie.
And to you and yours as well.
Holiday.
Yes. And to all of our wonderful listeners and friends, including Jeff Ponder, who joined us in the second period.
Very good.
All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Thank you all very much for listening. And again, have a very Merry Christmas. We will talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast. Until then, I'm Eddie Garcia. He's Doug Stolhand. Have a great week.